If you need a new roof or a repair, Easton Roofing will take care of you. Estimates are always free and suggestions are built on integrity. Visit EastonRoofing.com for more information. Get back to business faster with Easton Roofing. Easton Roofing. Integrity matters.
1, 2, 3.
The Border Patrol is presented by Walker Medical Linen Services, locally owned and operated, and HLAC certified, meeting the highest industry standards. Walker has partnerships with hospitals, surgery centers, and medical clinics in and around the metro area. Walker Medical Linen Services in Kansas City and online at walkermls.com.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. You need to get the version of this song done by the stars of the WWF on the wrestling album. You ever heard that one? Look, find it. Just find it. Not now. Just, you know, maybe next break, come back, or we'll have some fun with it. Do you not remember the wrestling album?
Dude, I don't think I was alive when WWF was a thing.
But it continued. I mean, it's...
So here's my thing.
What?
Everyone in sports talk radio loves or has some type of relationship with pro wrestling. I never really grew up watching it. Yeah, everyone here, I feel like, or everyone that I've met along the way in this business, I've never really tuned into it as
much. Me and my dad became great friends with a wrestler by the name of Kevin Wacholtz, who also wrestled as Mr. Magnificent Kevin Kelly. And then who for a while wrestled in the WWE as Nails, the escaped convict. Shockingly, that was our friend. And when I was a kid, dude, my dad would go sometimes, but a few times when I was like 12, I got to go with Kevin Nails, but he wasn't Nails and he was Mr. Magnificent. And I went with him to Wichita. I went with him to Topeka. And I couldn't go all the way, you know, backstage in the dress because that's kind of a no-no. But I'd go, you know, with him for a little bit and just kind of be on the outside. And I remember one time I went to Wichita with him and he wrestled Harley Race in the main event. I mean, at that time, the Rockers were there, the Midnight Rockers. It was Shawn Michaels and Marty Jannetty. I met Ric Flair. I met Tully Blanchard. I met so many stars of wrestling that I grew up loving. Do you remember Slick, Nate?
In the WWE?
Yeah.
No.
Well,
he
was like a manager.
Okay.
But he started here and kind of in the Central States, and he used to have this cane that would hit people. That my dad gave him.
Okay.
That. My dad.
Who was
my
he
dad
manager
gave him
for?
That cane. Oh, I can't. I have to think back.
Okay,
he was a bunch.
I'd probably remember him if I saw him.
He was pretty, but he was a friend of ours.
Your dad gave him that cane, huh?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, one time I had Bulldog Bob Brown's son David over to my house to swim. I mean, dude, it was crazy, man. And like, you know, but I was like, I went to every wrestling match every Thursday night at Memorial Hall for my entire childhood. Sometimes my dad would just drop me off there, and I was friends with everyone there. Mm-hmm. No, but it was, I'm trying to think some of the other, we made such great friends. I remember we went up to Minnesota cause that's where Kevin lived. And he took us to the wrestling school where he was taught everything. Brad Ringens, who was an Olympian, but also a great pro wrestler. And, the Nasty Boys were there before they were still training, to become pro wrestlers. He took us to, I Love the Road Warriors. An Animal owned a gym in Minnesota, and he took us to the gym, and I met Animal there, which was freaking phenomenal. Yeah, man, I was so lucky. I had a chance to. I mean, I go with, you know, we're driving to Wichita. Who are you wrestling like? Harley Race. All right. And so, I mean, it was awesome. And one thing I took away from that, the baby faces, most times were the kind of in real life were the jerks. And the guys that were the heels in real life were the cool guys to hang out with and talk to. I could tell some stories. I can tell you that.
Oh, I'll bet.
I've seen some things in my life. Here is something. So anyway, Marco, yes. But the wrestling album was very popular back then. And there's a version of that song that you just played, that Land of a Thousand Dances by all the wrestlers. So I could sing it for you if you played it. But what do you? Who just called you?
A gentleman by the name of Jerry. He said he went used to go watch wrestling up in St. Joe.
Hey, Jerry. So did I. I went up there with Kevin to St. Joe as well.
Yeah, he talked about one day he went up there and saw Andre the Giant, asked for his autograph, and Andre asked him if he wanted to walk with him in the ring. So
that's awesome.
Just a fond memory.
Yeah, I had a chance to meet Andre and got his autograph, and my dad was furious because it cost $5.
My mom said, ask Steven about Bob Geigel.
Bob Geigel, yeah, he was the promoter and the co-owner along with Harley Race and some others. And then Bob Geigel also used to work security out at the Woodlands. And so, but he was a great wrestler as well. He always wore flip-flops for some reason. I don't know, whatever. Things I remember from being a kid. Okay, let's get into some other stuff here. This game between the Vikings and the Bills was so awesome. Now, the last couple of days, there's a compilation of who I think is one of the best radio play-by-play guys out there. I love Paul Allen. I love Paul Allen. I think he's fantastic. I think he's awesome. I wish he did every football game in the world. I don't know how you feel. You're a play-by-play guy. Do you like Paul Allen?
I've always been a fan of Paul Allen, and actually he was a little bit of a role model for me because – he is a play-by-play guy who also does sports talk radio. And back in the day, you were supposed to be one or the other, you know?
In the day. How about that?
Yeah, and he was one of those guys, because when I started doing this show with you and I still wanted to do play-by-play,
right?
There were people that said, oh, you can't do both. You got to pick one or the other.
Yeah, I was one of them. Go do play-by-play. So you appreciate him. Okay.
Have you PA heard and Dubay show in Minnesota's a great show, and he's a great play-by-play guy.
Have you heard the compilation of the final minutes, the big plays from that game between the Bills and the Vikings?
I don't know that I have from him.
Okay, good. I want you to hear this. And so everyone's retweeting this. Marco was listening to it on Monday, and for some reason he didn't want to play it on the show. I don't know, so now I'm forcing him. But here's this compilation of different calls from Vikings play-by-play man Paul Allen, the biggest plays down the stretch of that Vikings win over the Bills.
And he caught it at the Bills 40. What a grab. First and 10 Vikings from the 17. Here's Cousins with a pass over the middle. Caught by Jefferson at the 3, and he paid for it. Fourth and goal from inside the 1, trailing by 4 with 50 seconds to go. Cousins under center. Kirk sneaks. Pushed by C.J. Ham. And no signal. No signal. They said he didn't make it.
They said he didn't make it.
You lucky suckers. The ball is, right next to the goal stripe. So Josh Allen needs to get this thing out somehow. Take a safety.
Even if they get a safety, there's very little time left on the clock. But
yeah, but, that would make it a field goal, you lose game.
Yeah.
With 40. No, Josh Allen, 6'5", 240. Watch this. First down from the goal stripe for the Bills. Josh Allen puts Gabe Davis in motion, and Davis is behind Allen, and he tried to push him. He didn't get out of there.
He didn't get out.
He did not get out. That's a safety. Give it to us. Give us a safety.
Look at what's taking so long.
Oh, the ball came out.
Down.
Yes, the Vikings.
Are you kidding me?
The Vikings are going to win.
Are you kidding me?
Yes, drop that ball, Josh Allen.
That ball came loose.
Holy cow. 29-yard try left hash for Tyler Bass. Snap spot. Bass! Game tied. 2 seconds to go. 30-30. Well, 5:58 to go in overtime. Third and 10 from the Bills 26. Vikings with one timeout left empty backfield. Cousins shotgun. Bills rush 4 this time. Kirk straight in the pocket. Throws to the right. Caught! Jefferson!
Are you
at the 2-yard line?
In double coverage.
In double coverage. Snap spot. Joseph. Yes! Vikes lead 33-30.
Woo!
Allen back to pass in the pocket to the end zone. Yes! It is intercepted by Patrick Peterson. And he slides down.
Woo!
And the Minnesota Vikings
Fantastic. Goosebumps, right?
Give it to us.
Right.
Give it to us.
Right. I love it. I love it. He's great. Passion. He's fantastic. Fantastic. I love it. Okay, do you want to hear some more comments from Dayton Moore?
Yeah.
Oh, before, did you want to comment, have any reaction to anything that we played from Travis Kelce?
I mean, it's just always great listening to him.
The things he said about Kadarius Toney, though.
Yeah, I mean.
Right? You have to smile when you're listening to that, right?
I love that he brought up that video that made its way around social media on the catch that Toney made where he's literally adjusting his gloves as the ball's in the air, you know, before he goes up to catch it. Hearing even Kelce was like impressed by that, you know. It's enough to get you really excited about what Tony's going to bring to the table for this team the more and more he gets acclimated.
I can identify because usually before I say something on the radio, I adjust myself real quick. No.
Right.
Sorry. That's better.
I believe he's that composed to do that. Uh-huh.
Okay, so let me play some more of this. I've been waiting patiently to play some more of Dayton Moore's appearance on this Baseball Isn't Boring podcast that's hosted by Rob Bradford, who is a Red Sox beat reporter, oddly enough. I want to play number four right now. I don't want to wait on that anymore. This is a lengthy clip, Nate, so I want you to listen, take notes, and meet me back here in 4 minutes. Please do not lock yourself out of your hotel room. What?
This is going to be a 4-minute soundbite?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Is that all right or no?
Well, no, I mean, that means Dayton's on one, right?
Well, I thought maybe he'd go somewhere. I want you to listen to this. Yes. Yeah, he does. What did you say, Marco?
We've had many conversations today. I don't know.
You said he kind of rambles.
Oh, he rambles, but there's so much.
No, there's so much. Because me and Marco were texting back and forth. And I was trying, like, okay, this point, he said this, but he said this. But a lot of it's like Easter eggs buried in long rambles. You know what I mean?
And so, yeah. I'm going to have to take some notes on this.
Okay, he'll say a lot of things, but here's Dayton Moore on the Baseball Isn't Boring podcast. He was asked if it's harder to make trades in today's game with how much information is out there on players. And then he starts talking about the Will Myers trade. And then he said that Kansas City fans did not want him to be transactional. I don't – just play it.
Yeah, I think you get some paralysis by analysis. You know, there's a lot of information out there. We tend to dissect things and maybe overanalyze at times. I think we focus a lot on what we're giving up instead of what we're getting. You can only play nine. That's all you can play. And, you know, I told a highly respected general manager last week, I said, look, you can take all your prospects and you've got one of the best farm systems in the game. And you can have a game at your stadium and you're going to get 6,000 or 7,000 people there. That's great. But if you play one playoff game, the whole place will sell out. And I mean, so people aren't going to show up to watch prospects. Now, I love prospects. I love young players as much as anybody. I dream alongside of the fans and scouts and coaches. And, you know, we all share in the hope of the next great player. And we believe in him, and it's fun. And we love watching the evolution of a young player. That excites us. But, you know, at the end of the day, again, you focus on what you're getting in return and not what you're giving up. I remember we did the Will Myers trade. The overwhelming majority of our organization did not want to trade Will Myers. And I understood that. I didn't want to trade Will Myers either. You know, he became Rookie of the Year the following year. But I also knew that unless we got some impactful pitching, we were never, ever going to be a playoff caliber team, even though we had all these young players on the field that everybody felt were going to be stars. We knew, and I knew, that they were never going to be the stars that we felt they could become unless we got some meaningful pitching around them, because the pitching puts the game in rhythm. Mm-hmm. Rhythm defensively, it puts the game in rhythm offensively. And you know, you've got to have quality starting pitching. It just, the mindset is for your team, the psychology of your team is so important. And it, without starting pitching, it's going to always be hindered and compromised. Because when you're riding home after the game that night, everybody's asking themselves the question, okay, who's the starter for tomorrow?
Yeah.
They want to know who the center is, they want to know who the center fielder is, like who's the starting pitcher. There's a reason we think like that in the game, because it's so important. And so we had to make that deal for us to put us on track to be a winning baseball team. And it certainly did. I do think it's harder to make deals today. And I think people are okay with just being, we all want to be consistent over 162 games. We all want consistency. We all strive for that. But, you know, we always just tried to build it up and then go for it and put all the chips on the table and go for it. And we knew that's how we had to do it in Kansas City. Now, not every small market is the same, Rob. I mean, every community is different. And, I felt like we had a pulse on what the fans of Kansas City and what our fans could tolerate, what they appreciated, and what obviously they ultimately wanted. And that was a World Series championship. But the fans of Kansas City enjoy the ups and downs of the evolution of a major league player. They like to follow them, and they don't like to see a lot of change. And where people would say that you've got to be more transactional with your roster and move players, we never really did that. We stayed committed to our core group, but our fans understood that and liked that and fell in love with them. Now, we had certain people in our fan base and probably our ownership group that didn't like it. I mean, they wanted to be more transactional. That's okay.
Boy. So then, is that right there at the end, we had some people in the fan base, and then once again, he goes, the ownership group who wanted to be more transactional, right? So,
yeah.
So right there, he's telling you the ownership group wanted him to be more transactional, to make more moves, and he didn't want to do it. But then he also says, you know, Kansas City enjoyed the ups and downs. I don't think Kansas City really enjoyed the downs too much. I don't believe that. But so you know that. But Kansas City, you know, that's what they liked, for him not to make many moves. Is that you react to that?
Well, nobody's going to the games. Like, the stadium has been damn near empty the last couple years. So, that's what he started off with at the beginning of his answer, you know, was you could have all the prospects you want out there, but, you know, you're going to get 6,000-7,000 fans coming to your games. If you go to the playoffs, the place will be packed.
But didn't it feel like the fan base and people around the team and people that analyze the team were begging him to be more transactional over the past several years? And he's saying, yeah, well, you know, I mean, and he goes, oh, yeah, maybe a couple people in the fan base. And he goes, so in the ownership group, that almost sounds like John Sherman, right? I mean, who else in the ownership group is he going to hear from? I mean, I don't know.
I don't know how present all the others. There's a lot of people in that ownership group.
But he said ownership group.
Yeah.
You know,
so a lot of people in that ownership group, right. And a lot of them go to the games, you know, so maybe they talk to him.
They want me to be more transactional, but.
I mean, but Dayton used to say that all the time, but we can't trade Whit Merrifield because, you know, the fans, they love him.
No, the fans love to win.
Yeah, yeah.
Remember, you know, he wants to have the kids to be able to buy the jersey and.
And all Whit Merrifield wanted to do was get the hell out of town.
Right.
I mean.
Okay, so did anything else there? I thought that was.
No.
I thought that was really.
Going to be peaches and roses all year?
I thought that was really interesting stuff, though. At the end, when he's just telling you, that, you know,
everybody else in the organization wanted us to make trades, but I, you know,
that's just not what we did.
The few thousand people that showed up to the games didn't want me to, so I don't want to do that.
Here's number three, Dayton Moore, talking about how he builds a team, and dealing with analytics?
Well, I think the game, you're constantly evolving, as we know. And I appreciate and respect and admire and covet the data and information that is out there, always have. But, you know, I learned the game through, you know, a different way. And I learned it through more of a pure evaluation, understanding the makeup of players, what motivates them, what drives them to be successful. And those things, I believe, will never, ever change. I mean, you have to understand the heart and the desire of the player and, you know, what their habits are like and what their routines consist of, because that is a predictor of future success. And then, of course, you have to understand their aptitude. And sometimes it takes a little longer to figure that out. You know, there's obviously emotional intelligence, I think, is often way overlooked in our game. And you've got to understand that, you know, who has the ability to get along with players and understand what coaches are trying to convey to them, and dealing with and accepting and embracing the diversity of the game and all the different people involved in the game. It takes great emotional intelligence to understand that and to be successful in today's baseball world. But Rob, I've always used information, data, statistics, analytics to validate my judgment as an evaluator. And I've always used that information to perhaps uncover you know, something about a player that maybe my eyes aren't seeing. And so I've always trusted that. But at the end of the day, you know, you use it as a tool, and it's a valuable tool.
Okay, so I got to get to this one. Now, of all the Dayton Moore's players from his time in Kansas City, the good ones, who irritated the analytics community more than anyone, would you say?
Oh, man.
And we have a friend of the show that texts us all the time and trashes this guy.
Okay, this is a current player that's
I was Eric Hosmer, right?
Oh, Hosmer. Yeah, right. Yeah, okay.
The war and everything else, right? That he's a very polarizing player. And so I just feel like the analytics community and people that have, you know, been against Hosmer and say that Hosmer's not a good player, their hair is going to be set on fire when they listen to him talk about Eric Hosmer. Can I play this for you? Would you like to hear that?
Yeah.
Okay, here's Dayton Moore on, and he gets it. How does it start out? He's like, again, kind of here and there, but eventually he gets to Eric Hosmer and why he loved him so much.
He talked about how he builds an organization,
okay,
and then getting a player like Hosmer to focus around.
All right, play it.
I mean, you look at, you know, the important to me, I think a manager is so important. I really do. I mean, it sets the tone, you know, for the entire organization. You want a manager, coaches that people aspire to play for. And I think that's where I think people have started to understand that. There was a period of time where people said, you know, I don't think the manager is that impactful. I completely disagree. The clubhouse is a living, breathing organism. Those players are dealing with all kinds of things on the field, off the field. And our game requires so much concentration. It requires so much focus and discipline. And when you're dealing with things out of your control or maybe self-induced off the field, it divides you and robs you of your focus and concentration on the field, which is so necessary to be successful over 162 games. And, you know, what I would say to this is, you know, there's a lot of times that I'll be looking over, you know, the stat sheet, if you will, for the previous month. And I'll say something, I'll think to myself, man, this player performed a lot better than I thought he did. Because I couldn't remember one big play or one big hit or one big game he pitched that was significant. But, you know, the numbers were, okay, they're pretty good. But I don't remember him doing anything to really help us win a game. And then there'll be a player and I'll be looking at it and I'll be saying, man, I thought he did a lot better than this. Because I can remember two or three hits or two or three plays or, or two or three games where they pitched extremely well or got a big hit. Yeah, they only got one hit that game, but it was the biggest hit. Or they didn't get on base except the last at bat of the game in the ninth inning to start a rally. And, you know, those are the types of things that win baseball games. And players in that clubhouse understand that. And nobody, you can't look. The one thing that we all know, Robin, you've been in clubhouses a long time. You can't fool players.
No.
You can't fool them. Don't even try. You might as well be transparent with all aspects of what you do because you're not going to fool them. And they know who can play. They know who the winners are. They know who the players that care deeply about winning and competing and genuinely can celebrate in the accomplishments of their teammates. And there's very few that have the ability to do that. And, you know, John Wooden said it this way. He said he'd rather have a player that makes the team great than a great player. Eric Hosmer has always been one of those players for me. He's a type, does he have ability? Of course he does. He's been on all-star games. He's won gold gloves. He has talent. He was a first-round pick for a reason. But he's always been one of those players that makes a team great, makes a team go because of his attitude, his selflessness. He genuinely celebrates in the accomplishments of others, and he gets big hits, and he gets on base. And that's what he did for us in Kansas City. And, you know, I could talk about Eric Hosmer all day, what he brings to a baseball team.
Nate Bucati.
Well, that was the subject of the quote that I use that we talk about all the time on our show when we talk about different teams. When I remember J.J. Piccolo telling me when they were coming through the minor league system, he said, look, if you're going to win a championship, your best guy's got to be your best guy. And the Royals always felt that way about Eric Hosmer. They always felt that way about him. And they won a championship with him. And he was kind of at the center of a lot of that stuff, wasn't he?
Absolutely.
The mad dash home and all that stuff.
Absolutely. But that, I mean, it's so interesting to me because that approach, that line of thinking helped the Royals win a championship, but also after that helped bury the Royals and put them where they are now. Such a double-edged sword, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I just think it's about balance. You know, like you got to balance what the numbers tell you versus what your eyes tell you. You can't lean too much on one or the other.
Well, there's some other stuff too that he talked about, the trade for Gilmesh or the signing of Gilmesh, and he did that because he didn't want Zach Greinke in the spotlight as being the guy, and Zach didn't want it either, so a lot of the reason why he signed Gilmesh was to benefit Zach Greinke, and so that actually made some sense. It was interesting to hear that. And he also talked about changes to baseball and hating instant replay and some other stuff. So, but those main takeaways there was that we played clips earlier that he was absolutely shocked that he got fired, never saw it coming, was still thinking, you know, he's going to be here for at least three more years. And so he was shocked there. He talked about having a chance to go back to Atlanta after the 2017 season, but David Glass convinced him to stay. But then Dayton Moore didn't realize there was going to be an ownership change, and he was going to have to, you know, go through that. And he, as he said, help an ownership group that didn't know what they're doing, is what he said. Paraphrasing here, but that was the point he made. And then essentially, was it more transactional? And didn't make more moves because the Kansas City fans liked it that way, and people in Kansas City don't like change. Did I miss anything that was the finer points?
Those are the big ones, I think.
That's what he
said.
He wasn't transactional because Kansas City fans don't like change. No. Kansas City fans don't like losing.
Well, you know, David Glass didn't want a new stadium, remember?
Well, sorry, I didn't see last couple years, I didn't see, you know, people rolling around town in Whit Merrifield jerseys.
No. But this is David Glass and Dayton Moore. I mean, David Glass didn't want to build the downtown stadium because somebody wrote him a letter saying he liked the K and he liked the parking there. You know, I mean.
It was a fascinating listen if you're a baseball fan and if you're wondering what Dayton Moore what he's thinking right now. And again, he said he expects to be in spring training with another team, and he'll know what he's doing in the next 10 days. The hot rumors are he's going to work for the Texas Rangers under Chris Young. Marco.
I'm a little fired up now.
Oh, here we go.
After the chain. It's just, no.
Say it.
We're Kansas City fans. We're fans of the sport, of the Kansas City teams. Have been our whole lives. Change.
You hate change.
Hate change. Don't like change. But when it's necessary and it's and you can recognize it, Dayton Moore talked about you can't fool baseball players in the locker room. Well, yeah, you can't fool a fan base. And so that's why it was no shock when to us when he got fired. I think he's the only one in that at the time in Kansas City that was shocked when that change came.
Okay.
My old religion professor, Mr. Schneewise at Bishop Ward High School, said that change is the only permanent thing in your life, so you better get used to it.
Thank you. An excellent listener, Simon, just tweeted in. He's thinking the same thing I was thinking. When he was defending Hosmer and talking about Hosmer and talking about those kind of players that you look at the box score and they didn't really do anything to help your team, but there's things that they do that help the clubhouse, and that's why they're on the team. The whole time, I'm, you know who I'm thinking, right? Ryan O'Hearn.
Oh.
Right? Like, we can't see any reason that why he's on the team. But clearly, but I say Dayton loved him. Well, they must love him, too. Because if you're looking for actual reasons statistically or analytically, whatever, you can't find it. Can't fight, right? It's I think that explains it a little bit more, doesn't it?
Maybe, but Dayton's not here anymore.
Well, there's,
they,
I mean, but that kind of, I'm telling you, man, them signing Ryan O'Hearn made me nervous, because like, what is going on? I thought this was done.
No more shift. Baseball's new.
There we go. Thank you. No more shifts. That's right. We will take a break. Adam Kaplan after this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Let's talk some football with Adam Kaplan. Follow him on Twitter. Kaplan NFL is his handle. What's up, Adam? How are you?
Guys, I'm well. I am looking forward to this weekend slate of games. And then what happens in Buffalo? Will the game still be held there because of the pending snowstorm and winds? And can Cleveland even get in there and so forth? So that, and typically you make those decisions by 48 hours before the game, and I remember doing some reporting on these situations back when I was at ESPN. I remember when the game was moved to Detroit, if you recall. I think it was the Bills game and whoever they played that year back in maybe 2015. So these things happen, and here we are. We're in mid-November.
Okay, we have our friend Adam Kaplan on the line. I want to ask you about Kadarius Toney, because McCole Hardman, Juju Smith-Schuster, and MVS all did not practice on Wednesday, so we don't know if any of them are going to play. Last week, Kadarius Toney already had a big impact game, and I'm a moron because just before the game, I dropped him on my fantasy football team. Someone else
called
me. Well, because I'm an idiot, because I needed another spot. Defenses, stupid bye weeks, Adam Kaplan, I'm done with this. Anyway,
I took a purposeful zero so I could not cut a good player. I don't worry about 1 week. As long as you know you're getting in. Now, if you're a team that's on the fringe for fantasy, getting in the playoffs, I understand that move. But, yeah, his role is going to grow. It's going to continue to grow. And Tony's healthy, knock on wood. They actually have this rotation. And how about CES not being part of the rotation anymore?
Right. I mean, Clyde Edwards-Helaire didn't get a touch. But, I mean, we heard Travis Kelce on his podcast earlier raving about Kadarius Toney, and his brother asked him, can you believe the Giants let him go? And Travis Kelce says, I don't want to know why. I have no idea why, but we're glad to have him here. And I get it. It wasn't going to work out for a number of reasons. But this is one of those things that, you know, maybe in the playoffs or if the Chiefs win the Super Bowl, people around the NFL are going to be scratching their heads. How in the hell did we let the Chiefs get Kadarius Toney for a third and a sixth-round pick? That's where this is headed, I think.
Yeah, now, the issue with him was, you know, as you gather information, you know, what happened there? Why did he want out? They were convinced, some people, the Giants, as I understand, were convinced he just didn't want to be there. And how did his hamstring magically become 100%? I mean, just, It was kind of odd. Yeah, it was definitely kind of odd. But, yeah, no, he's a difference maker. And he's such an Andy Reid type of gadget player. You love having a guy like this who you can line up anywhere. He's a difference maker. You mentioned with Hardman's injury, and they have to get through that. They don't know if he's going to be able to play. And we saw Smith-Schuster's hit, and that was a devastating concussion. I mean, who knows how long he'll be out for. They do get Frank Clark back from his two-game suspension, so that's one player on defense they're going to get back. And they're pretty healthy on that side of the football. Things are actually looking pretty good for the Chiefs now. They weathered an early storm. Right now, if we were to rank the teams, I would have Chiefs number one.
That's right. Absolutely. And this Sunday night, the Chiefs already have a two-game lead and already have one win over the Chargers. If they beat the Chargers Sunday night, they'll have a three-game lead with a tiebreaker. I think they're going to win the division anyway, but it'll be over for sure if they win on Sunday night. And so I know the Chargers, they're battling many injuries. Tell me what you think of their situation and what you think happens on Sunday night.
Yeah, well, a couple things. Let's start on offense. Both receivers have injuries. Keenan Allen, in fact, he didn't play in the first game. He's had a hamstring issue since week two. He's barely played. He started working back, and he actually played in week seven, had a setback, hasn't played since then, got hurt in week two. They're hopeful. He started work yesterday. Mike Williams from the high ankle sprain, he believes he could go. They won't know until probably after Friday's practice. But the big injuries for them, they're down three defensive tackles for the season. Austin Johnson, who's a run stopper, he used to be with the Giants. He has a knee injury. He's out for the season. Christian Covington is a good backup D tackle. He tore his pectoral muscle. He's out for the season. They got another kid who tore a patella last week. So they're down three defensive tackles. Joey Bosa is not going to play after having groin surgery. They're hopeful that he'll be back early next month. J.C. Jackson, well, he's their most talented corner and their highest paid corner. He tore his patella. He's out for the season. And it's starting to wear on them. Oh, their kicker's out. Their left tackle's out for the season. They're going with a rookie who's more of a guard than a tackle, though it's working out with Jamari Shaler. But overall, they've got a lot of injuries. It's kind of like par for the course for this team. They cannot get out of their own way. They're still 5-4. They're competitive. But the other story for this team, guys, is they're having trouble scoring. They're just not. Due to the Mike Williams injury, you're going to see a lot of Josh Palmer. Josh Palmer, if both guys are back, will be their third receiver. He's starting with DeAndre Carter. DeAndre Carter is the other receiver. He's been a kickoff and punt returner his entire career. He's been more of a journeyman, been with like seven teams. So this is what happens when you're without your two starting receivers. It starts to wear on you. And then the other thing is, other than the Atlanta game, they just have not been able to run the football.
Okay, so when you look at the line, the Chiefs are pretty big favorites against the Chargers on Sunday night. What do you think happens with the Chiefs favored by 6.5?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a 7-10 point game. The thing about the Chargers is they could keep it close. You know, they play a lot of close games. That's quite frankly, that's a bit the story of their season. They've actually won more close games than they haven't. Last week, the line was too big. It was, I think, 7 or 7.5. I thought that was too big. I liked the Niners in that game against the Chargers, but I thought it was too big. The Chargers lost by 6, and I'd score 22-16. I see this being a fairly high-scoring game, 30-23, the Chiefs come ahead.
All right, what about tonight? Interesting game, Titans at Packers on Thursday Night Football.
Yeah, this should be fun. I give the Titans credit. When Derrick Henry doesn't do well, you would not think they'd find a way to win, but they won. They really have trouble scoring. Their defense is fantastic. This is another game. The Packers scoring is way down. I give them credit for a great comeback, being down 14 points at half, 28-14. They completely shut down the Cowboys in the second half. This is a competitive, low-scoring game. Maybe a field goal wins it.
Do you think the Eagles will have any trouble trying to rebound from their first loss going up against Jeff Saturday's Colts?
And remember, guys, they're on a short week. They played Monday night, tough home loss. He turned the ball over 4 times. It was incredible. Washington found the ball for 51 offensive plays in the first half, which has got to be a team record. And they hung on to win based on that penalty that from Brandon Graham. It was an unfortunate penalty on Taylor Heineke. But, yeah, they'll bounce back. The question is, do they blow them out? I don't know about that. So many games are less than 10 points now. This is the closest the last 30 years NFL games are. But give Jeff Saturday credit. That was quite the performance by the Colts. I know the Raiders are a bad team, but What and the decision to put Matt Ryan back at quarterback, that was the best one he made of the week.
Okay, so you mentioned this game between the Bills and the Browns, forecast calling for snow totals between 3 to 6 feet, including possible thunder snow. And the Bills are struggling right now. Josh Allen's struggling. First, what do you make of that? Is this just a slump, or are there serious issues in Buffalo? And so what do you think is going to happen with this game? Do you think they're going to move it?
I think a couple things. Let's take the Josh Allen situation. I think what happened there was, he didn't do anything on Wednesday and Thursday. They didn't want him to do anything. They wanted him to get his arm right, his right elbow as well as possible. He didn't throw a ton in Friday's practice, but what he did do is he threw the ball well. What I was told is he did well after Saturday's walkthrough, and that's why they made a decision not to move up Matt Barkley from the practice squad. So they felt confident he could go in. It just seems timing was off. That was probably what it was. Look, if you saw the game, they never should have lost that game. They had it. They were up by 17 points. That can't happen. And I'm sure they're chopping at the bit to play Cleveland. Cleveland's not a good football team. Their defense has struggled mightily. You know, they struggled at quarterback. Jacoby Brissett's just been okay. We won't know until Friday, sometime Friday, what they're going to do. There are usually alternate sites. They have to find they typically want to find an indoor stadium because the time of year that it is. You want to give as good conditions as you can have. As I was mentioning earlier, guys, I remember my reporting on the one, I think it was 2015. It was the Bills, and I don't remember who they were playing, but they moved to Detroit, and they had to make sure, obviously, that the lines were off. And it's not the first time that's happened. The league hates moving games, plus a team that loses a home game, which is awful. So you're going to want to keep it probably as close as possible. You also, by the way, will look at the bye week teams. I mean, you can always move it to Miami or Jacksonville. You can move it to Florida. That way you don't have to worry about the weather, and you can actually hold it outdoors.
Yeah, in 2014, they moved the Jets and the Bills to Detroit on Monday Night Football.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah, 2014.
That's
right,
a hell of a sight. Okay, so one more really intriguing matchup. We mentioned what happened last week to the Bills. The Minnesota Vikings are 8-1. They host the Dallas Cowboys. This should be a really fun game. Who do you like here?
Yeah, one of three games with both teams over 500 this week. Yeah, this is a good game. I like the Vikings. You know, they find ways to win. They're another team that wins close games. They're very tough-minded on a rookie head coach, Kevin O'Connell. And Dallas, though, they may get Zeke Elliott back this week. I don't think it really matters. He's a shell of what he once was. They had problems on the back end of that defense last week. That was surprising. Christian Watson, the rookie receiver from North Dakota State, just ran by the Cowboys secondary. This should be a fun game. This is also a game that should be within 7 points. I would pick the Vikings, though.
Adam, a very interesting matchup for Chiefs fans to watch because both the Raiders and the Broncos suck, and so we take great joy in that. Which is the bigger dumpster fire, the Raiders or the Broncos, as they battle in Denver on Sunday afternoon?
Well, the thing with Russell Wilson is they're stuck with him for at least 3 years due to contract structure, so they just got to get him righted. They've had some injuries at wide receiver. They have some pretty bad injuries on the offensive line. That's hurt them. They don't run the ball well. Javonte Williams lost for the season. That's crushed them. Their defense is competitive. That keeps them in the game there. The Raiders' defense is really bad on the back end. That showed last week. Josh Jacobs has to have a big game for them to stay in this. This is another game of two bad football teams that will probably keep it pretty close.
Adam Kaplan, tell everyone we would love to follow you on Twitter, but I know that you have many things that you do to interact with fans out there and our listeners. What do you got going on that we can follow or monitor?
Yeah, so on Twitter, at Kaplan NFL, C-A-P-L-E-N NFL. And then I'm on Sports Grid TV 3 days a week with Scott Farrell, Monday, Thursday, and Friday, and also Sunday on their Pro Football Today show. Just follow me there, and also I'll be with you guys, I think. Yeah, we'll be together next week. I know we're going to get our segment done probably earlier in the week, so I look forward to doing that and seeing what happens here in Chiefs-Chargers.
We cannot miss our weekly segment with Adam Kaplan. People love it. I love it. I hope you love it, so we'll make it happen next week. Until then, thank you so much for the time, sir, and have a great weekend.
You too, guys. Thanks.
It's Adam Kaplan. That, Marco, is a fountain of information, and every week we drink. We drink from it. Do you enjoy it? Did that quench your thirst? Did you drink from Adam Kaplan? Did you enjoy, did Adam Kaplan quench your thirst for knowledge in the NFL?
Yes.
Did you go to him, did you cup your hands and... You wish I'd go home?
No, not at all. Okay. No. I wish Nate would come back.
Really?
No.
Yes or no?
He should have scheduled the flight for 8 o'clock.
Right.
I did enjoy hearing Adam Kaplan there. I'm excited. When people keep asking me, what are your plans for Thanksgiving? What are you doing for Thanksgiving? I'm like, oh, there's football on that day.
Football, NFL. football. I got some football. Back into this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John, Marco Marquez, former Chiefs wide receiver Gary Dieter is in the studio. What's up, Gary Dieter? How are you?
I'm doing outstanding.
Let's find out what Gary Elize thinks of Thunder Snow. Gary?
I love it. I love Thunder Snow.
Adam Schefter just tweeted out there's a chance of Thunder Snow in Buffalo, 3 to 6 feet. Be honest, you wish you were up in Buffalo for this weather event.
I know. And if I had already retired like 2 weeks from now, I could say, hey guys, I'm traveling to Buffalo. I'm going to be live from Buffalo. I got to tell you what's happening up here in Buffalo. Oh my God, I could be there.
So do you think that is going to be that bad? They're going to move this game?
Well, let's see here. I do think that there's a good chance of some snow. And 3 to 6 feet of snow in those snow bands. The question is, will one of those snow bands be over the Buffalo Stadium? You know, who knows? So I know in Green Bay it's going to be cold. But, tonight Tennessee takes on the Packers. What do you think of that game, guys?
Tennessee's got a lot of injuries. The Packers may have found Stella got her groove back against the Dallas Cowboys, but... I don't know, Thursday night football. Gary Dieter, who do you like tonight between Tennessee playing at Green Bay?
I think, like you said, Packers, I feel like they're going to have a little bit of momentum right now. A-Rodg got some confidence in those young guys, and I think when you give A-Rodg a little bit of confidence, I think he takes it, and you see what happens. I just remember the one season when he had that relaxed statement. I mean, it took one game to change the whole season, so... I think that's the case with them.
I think we're both leaning Packers, Gary Elizak.
I'm leaning Tennessee. There you go.
Oh boy,
I'm leading my league. So,
what about the Kansas City forecast?
I think that it's going to be a good day. And in Buffalo, I just did an analysis of the lake effect potential, and yeah, 6 feet of snow is possible. The lakes are still relatively warm. When they freeze over, the lake effect snow basically goes away, but they won't freeze over for another month or two at least. So it's looking like there could be, as you guys said, up to maybe 6 feet of snow near Buffalo. So the Browns come into town there. That might be an interesting game to watch. So we'll see how that goes this weekend. Here in Kansas City, there's a snow shower that is located over Lawrence right now, the home of the Jayhawks, who just beat Duke the other night. And it looks like it's going to be a loft. I'm analyzing it. I think it's dry near the surface, so the snow is coming down, forming at about the 8,000-10,000-foot level. And as it comes down to about 3,000 to 5,000 feet, as I just tweeted out, it's evaporating. So the dry air is eating up the snow, and it doesn't get below 3,000 feet or so. So this first snow shower isn't going to make it to the ground. Later today, a little disturbance and a cold surge is going to arrive. And this cold surge is going to allow us tomorrow to have the coldest November 18th in our history. Tomorrow's November 18th. 29 is the record for the coldest high temperature tomorrow. We're expecting a high of 27. The good news? It will be warming up on Saturday back into the 30s and Sunday near 41 degrees as we enjoy Sunday night football on KSHB 41. So the snow shower is right over Lawrence right now, but as I said, I think
the snow is not, the clouds are going to thicken up because the snow is falling above us. If we had a 5,000-foot mountain, there'd be 2 inches of snow real quick right now. But we don't have a 5,000-foot mountain here, do we, guys?
I don't know what you're saying.
Right. You said a lot of things that went right through my ears.
Really? I was trying to explain it. Do you have any questions?
Bounce around. I got a lot of questions. We ain't got the time for it, though. I have no idea what's going on right now.
You weren't listening. That's what happened.
I was trying to.
Yeah.
Mountains, I was saying, snow.
We have Murgat.
Marco, did you get it? I mean,
Buffalo.
I heard.
So if I'm 5,000 feet in the air, I'll get some snowflakes. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. If you're up there high, you will get to see snowflakes. There you go. I thought it made sense.
Well, I'll test what we're doing.
Right, anyway, tonight Tennessee beats Green Bay, and that pretty much will wipe out Green Bay's chance of playoffs. And they're going to really get this is a big game for them. So Tennessee over Green Bay tonight. I'm going to go against you guys. Final score of tonight's Thursday night football game, Tennessee 27. Green Bay only scored 17 points.
Thank you, Gary.
You're welcome.
That is Gary Lezak, who said many words on Sports Radio 810 WHB.